Hard power and soft power. The utility of military force as an instrument of policy in the 21st century. Author, Colin S. Gray. Power is one of the more contestable concepts in political theory, but it is conventional and convenient to define it as the ability to affect the outcomes you want and, if necessary, to change the behavior of others to make things happen. In recent decades, scholars and commentators have chosen to distinguish between two kinds of power, hard and soft. The former, hard power, is achieved through military threat or use, and by means of economic menace or reward. The latter, soft power, is the ability to have influence by co-opting others to share some of one's values, and as a consequence, to share some key elements on one's agenda for international order and security. Whereas hard power obliges its addressers to consider their interests in terms mainly of calculable costs and benefits. Principally the former, soft power, works through the persuasive potency of ideas that foreigners find attractive. When considered closely, the subject of soft power and its implications for the hard power of military force reveals a number of plausible working propositions that have noteworthy meaning for both policy and strategy. 11 propositions. 1. The utility of military force. Military force has less utility as an instrument of policy in the 21st century than it did in past times. Even recent times past, hard military threat and use are more difficult to employ today, in part because of the relatively recent growth in popular respect for universal humanitarian values. However, this greater difficulty does not mean that military force has lost its distinctive ability to secure some political decisions. The quality of justification required for the use of force has risen, which means that the policy domain for military relevance has diminished, but has by no means disappeared. 2. Between yesterday and today, times change. History is chronological, but it's not reliably linear. The political and other contexts for the use of force today do not offer authoritative guidance for the future. To know the 2000s is not necessarily to know the 2010s. This argument is best appreciated when we recognize that our predecessors did not know what their future would be, and we have no convincing reason to suppose that our future is any more reliably predictable than theirs was. Thus, contemporary predictions anticipating the utility or disutility of military force in the future are not to be trusted. 3. Military force and culture. Military force is not a simple quality or quantity that can be thought of and treated as an elementary particle, irreducible in substance. It is complex and comes in packages of differing sizes and contents. Warfare can take many forms, most obviously irregular, hybrid, regular, and something different with weapons of mass destruction. The utility of military force cannot depend only upon the quality and quantity of force threatened or applied, but most crucially upon the political determinant of required strategic effectiveness. One size will not fit all, notwithstanding the many features of globalization that have the potential to smooth out some differences among the still distinctive polities and their societies. The strategic contexts and cultures of actual and potential belligerents assuredly will be more or less asymmetrical. Thus, the utility of military force varies with culture and circumstances. Inter alia, it is not the same free-floating objective calculable truth. It is necessary to come to grips with the cultural and situational dimensions that are vital to the sense in our examination, yet which frequently are not considered with sufficient rigor. 4. Hard times make for soft principles. For both good and for ill, ethical codes are adapted and applied under the pressure of more or less stressful circumstances, and tend to be significantly situational in practice. This is simply the way things are and have always been. What a state licenses or tolerates by way of military behavior affected in its name depends to a degree on how desperate and determined are its policymakers and strategists. Political behavior regarding the use of force is governed far more by considerations of pertinent self-interest than it is by legal or ethical codes. Fortunately, such codes for restraint that are now extant generally function to serve the interests of belligerents. But this fact should not be permitted to obscure another fact, which is that when polities experience crisis and wage war, they contend for the right to determine the rules of engagement that best suit them. 5. The effects of war. War may be a strategic surgery conducted under law for political ends, but also it is brute force or violence. It involves warfare, which means military force, which means violence that causes damage, injury, and death. Some of the debate on military force and its control fails to come to grips with the blood reality, chaos, and friction that is in the very nature of warfare. Worthy and important efforts to limit conduct in warfare could not avoid accepting the inherent nastiness of the subject. War may be necessary, and it should be restrained in its conduct, but with all it is by definition, liberally violent behavior. 6. Soft power. Soft power is the ability to achieve influence by means other than military and economic. By and large, It should not be thought of as an instrument of policy. It does not lend itself to careful regulation, adjustment, and calibration. What does this mean? To begin with a vital contrast, whereas military force and economic pressure, negative or positive, can be applied by choice as to quantity and quality, soft power cannot. Of course, the enemy or rival too has a vote on the outcome, regardless of the texture of the power applied. But hard power allows us to decide how we will play in shaping and modulating the relevant narrative, even though the course of history must be an interactive one once the engagement is joined. In principle, we can turn the tap on or off at our discretion. The reality is apt to be somewhat different because, as noted above, the enemy, contingency, and friction will intervene. 7. Substituting hard power. Power of all kinds depends on context for its value, but especially so for the soft variety. For power to be influential, those who are to be influenced have a decisive vote, but the effects of contemporary warfare do not allow recipients the luxury of a vote. They are coerced. On the other hand, the willingness to be co-opted by soft power varies hugely among recipients. In fact, there are many contexts wherein the total of soft power would add up in the negative, not the positive. When soft power capabilities are strong in their values and cultural trappings, there's always the danger that they will incite resentment, hostility, and a potent blowback. In those cases, soft power would indeed be strong, but in a counterproductive direction. The problem would lie in the belief that soft power is a reliable instrument of policy that could complement or, in some instances, replace military force. In fact, it cannot sensibly be regarded as a substantial alternative to hard military power. Familiarity with the concept alone encourages the fallacy that hard and soft powers have roughly equivalent weight in utility. An illusion of broad policy choice is thus fostered, when in fact effective choices are severely constrained. 8. The weakness of soft power. An important inherent weakness of soft power as an instrument of policy is that it utterly depends on the uncoerced choices, calculations, and feelings of undermotivated foreigners. Sometimes their preferences will be compatible with ours, but scarcely less often they will not. Interests and cultures do differ. 9. The use of soft power. Soft power should become more potent, courtesy of the electronic revolution that enables a networked global community. The domain for the policy utility of soft power is either structurally permissive of easy success, or is unduly restrained to such influence. It tends to be either so easy to exercise that it is probably in little need of a policy push, being essentially pre-existent, or too difficult to achieve because local interests, or cultural, or both, deny it political traction. 10. Joining the two powers. Hard and soft power should be complementary, but unless one is strategically competent, neither will have high utility for policy, either singly or jointly. Whereas competent strategy enables hard military power to be all, or most of what it can be, soft power does not lend itself readily to strategic direction. 11. Enabling powers. Soft power and hard power are more mutually enabling than they are fungible. Provided the different natures of hard and soft power are understood, the critical distinguishing factor being coercion versus attraction, it is appropriate to regard the two kinds of power as mutual enablers. However, theirs is an unequal relationship. The greater attractiveness of soft power is more than offset in political utility by its inherent unsuitability for policy direction and control. Conclusion. From all the factors above, it follows that military force will long remain an essential instrument of policy. That said, popular enthusiasm in Western societies for the placing of serious restraints on the use of force can threaten the policy utility of the military. Although it is highly appropriate to be skeptical of the policy utility of soft power, such skepticism must not be interpreted as implicit advice to threaten or resort to military force with scant references to moral standards. Not only is it right in an absolute sense, it is also expedient to seek, seize, and hold the moral high ground. There can be significant strategic advantage and moral advantage to risk sounding cynical. Finally, it is essential to recognize that soft power tends to work well when there's scarcely need of it. But the more challenging contexts for national security require the mailed fist, even if it is cushioned, but not concealed, by a glove of political and ethical restraint.